The Iron Game Chalk Talk Podcast is brought to you by the following sponsors: EliteForm.com, IgnitionAPG.com, PlayUSA at PLAEUSA.com, and Sorinex Exercise Equipment at Sorinex.com. And now, the Iron Game Chalk Talk Podcast. Welcome to Iron Game Chalk Talk with your host, Ron McKeefer.
Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go! Let's go! Everything you got!
On this podcast, hear Coach McKeefer's straight talk about training, featuring the top strength and conditioning professionals from around the world. And now, here's your host, Ron McKeefer.
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron McKeefer, and this is episode number 152. Super excited to have Leanne Blinn with us. Leanne is the head strength coach at Franklin High School in Massachusetts. She's also a very accomplished power athlete, one of the strongest women in the world, and followed her from afar for quite some time. Got a chance to speak with her quite a bit at this last conference, and just really impressed by her and the job she's done both as a coach and as an athlete. Wanted to have her on the show. She's done a fantastic job of building a program at Franklin High School. The culture, she's done it with really developing a really strong power lifting team, as well as a summer camp, and it's really helped her kind of overcome some of the challenges of being at a school with, not necessarily limited funding, but, obviously funding restrictions and things along those lines. And so we talked quite a bit about that. Tons of great takeaways there, especially for the high school strength coaches listening, as well as just kind of where she sees the future of high school strength and conditioning going. And so there's tons of great information in this episode. Before we do, though, we want to make sure we recognize our sponsors for this show. EliteForm. EliteForm's been with me since the very beginning and just a phenomenal company, always at the cutting edge, always doing things to push the envelope, like just recently releasing a Power RM tracking into their system and making that integrated so that it's as seamless as possible for everybody. If you follow the work of Dr. Brian Mann, being able to track that, use that as opposed to an intensity, a weight or something along those lines, kind of an arbitrary weight, is really down more into the needs of the athlete on that specific day. And, they're making it, again, just a seamless transition as a coach, being able to track it right there at the rack, push it to the tablet or the iPad there. And I'm just so impressed by the fact that they're always on the cutting edge of things and pushing the envelope. I just love that, and the fact that they're so supportive of the strength and conditioning community by sponsoring, different clinics, the show here, all those types of things. So if you're in the market for, a velocity based device, a power tracking device, I'd definitely reach out to EliteForm. Talk to Skip and those guys, fantastic people. And whether or not you go with them or not, please let them know how much you appreciate them being involved with the show and in the community and all the things that they do. And so can't say enough great things about EliteForm. Lastly, Ask Coach Mac has been going extremely well. Have received tons of great questions. Tried my best to answer as many as I can. I want to continue to do that. And the show serves as multiple purposes. One is I'm constantly looking for ways to give back to the community. That's number one, first and foremost. The second reason is because I just got to a point where it's just so difficult to stay on top of all the different email questions that I get, said very early on that I want to do my best to answer each and every email. And I thought like this might be a great way for me to be able to bring short 10-minute podcasts to you each week, answering a question from around the world and doing my best to get those questions that are most general, that are constantly asked, and find ways to each week bring you something different, something that you can talk about as a staff, and just create a little nugget there to be able to chew on for yourself or for your staff or whatever. And so make sure to check that out. Go to AskCoachMac.com. Scroll to the bottom of the page. You'll see a little widget there that is a recording app. You can hit the green button, start recording, ask your question right there. I'll do my best to answer each and every question. Definitely pick out the ones that are most common and then feature those on the show. And so check that out. Subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher. And, you know, like I said, each week we'll bring you an answer and hopefully generate some thought and some discussion amongst you and your staff each week there. So want to get to Leanne's episode. Sit back and enjoy, and we'll see you on the other side. All right, guys, super excited to have Leanne Blinn with us. Leanne, you know, I got a chance to see her speak again at the NSCA clinic, and just an accomplished athlete, accomplished coach, and but I'm super pumped to have you on the show. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Leanne, go with, you know, Reader's Digest version, because I mean your athlete career is, I mean, we could talk about that for hours, but you know, you've tried everything, you've wanted everything, but take us back to what got you into kind of competing as an athlete and then going through the coaching progression to where you're there now at Franklin up in Massachusetts.
So I'm 43 years old, so there's a lot, you know, and I'll give you the Reader's Digest version. Yeah. I started, I played field hockey and softball in high school and in college at Endicott College, a small Division III school. It's only a two-year school. Played field hockey, softball, was an athletic training major. So that's kind of how I started. I started lifting weights when I was 13 years old in high school. And everyone kind of said, hey, you're kind of good at this. And I'm like, yeah, I'm all right. I'm all right. You know, I like my sports. I did field hockey, softball at Endicott. Then I went to Miami, Ohio to finish my undergrad in sports medicine. That's where I met Dan Dalrymple, who's at the Saints. Good old Dan. And he got me into the strength conditioning piece of it. So I was certified as an athletic trainer. And then I'm like, you know what? I don't want to sit around and wait for things to happen. I want to make things happen.
Absolutely.
And my background of being an athlete and seeing from the injury prevention standpoint when I was in school to saying, hey, I want to take this even further. In grad school, I went to grad school at Northern Arizona with Rich McClure. I was a GA strength conditioning coach back in 95. Wow. And, you know, learned all the Olympic lifting because I didn't learn a whole lot of Olympic lifting in the traditional gym setting, competed in Olympic lifting there. And then the other GA, Trevor Cottrell, he's like, you really should powerlift. He's like, you're kind of freaky strong. I'm like, yeah, whatever. And I did my first powerlifting meet and loved it ever since. So
yeah,
doing that. I've done strongman. I did World's Strongest Woman in 2003, competed, came in fifth. That was pretty cool. And I've been part of the U.S. women's powerlifting team since 2006. My first competition at Worlds was in 1997. So I've had a long, awesome career, compete for USA powerlifting, drug-free. You know, and I've been able to compete and train athletes along the way. I was a GA strength coach at Northern Arizona. Then I got my first job at Nevada Reno with Mike Jones and Aaron Shelley. Left there, went to Boston College, was strength coach there at Mike Poitamani. He was awesome. And then Joe Ken, who can forget House? I've known House since I was at Arizona State, or actually since I was at Nevada Reno. And then he had a job at Arizona State, and said I was there. So I've known him for about 20 years now, and one of the greatest influences in my career was House.
Yeah, awesome guy. Awesome guy. Just won the Strength Coach of the Year. Got that just the other day, too. But, you know, you went through quickly your coaching progression. I mean, you've owned a facility. You chose to go back into the high school arena. Why did you make that choice?
Well, I left, so kind of the heat and the time, I left the college setting in 2005. So after Arizona State, I had the opportunity, obviously, to stay at Arizona State. But in my career, okay, being a female in the profession, I love my job. I love coaching. There's not a lot of, opportunities for females.
Right.
And I was stubborn. I'm like, you know what? I want to work with football. I can out-coach 90% of you guys out there. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But at that time, it was like, all right, if I wanted to be a head strength conditioning coach, it kind of was that velocity time. So I went to work for Charles Poliquin and went to run a Poliquin Performance Center. And then changed it to Parisi Speed School. I met Martin Rooney and worked there for, you know, 3 years. Then I opened my own facility. And to me, honestly, I've been at all different levels. I honestly hated the business side. And I had the opportunity to come to high school, be the high school strength coach at Franklin High School 5 years ago. And I love this environment. To me, I've been able to take the high school environment and make it exactly into the college environment that I want. We have year-round training with these kids. Our coaches are 100% bought in. Last summer, I had 581 kids in my summer program. Right now, our off-season winter program, I got 190 kids. And if you can kind of see in the background, I only have an 1,800 square foot weight room.
Yeah.
So I have to be very creative in that sense.
No, but it looks really nice.
It's like beautiful. Two years ago, they built a brand new school. They kind of downgraded our old high school. Was about a 3,500 square foot weight room. It was an old workshop, wood shop, and they, you know, we had old equipment and everything. So we had beautiful hammer strength equipment. It's awesome. Works in bars and bumpers. It's awesome. But the room's too small. I got to be creative.
Yeah,
you
know, no doubt.
All the kids, but you know, I'm in my element. If I ever had the opportunity to go back to college, I probably would if it was the right environment. And you know, I love coaching, whether it's male, female. I've had a lot of great coaches that I've worked with and for, and it's been awesome. So
that's great. You know, that's something that, you know, that's a great topic, and we weren't kind of planning on talking about that, but talk a little bit more about, you know, female strength and conditioning coaches and kind of the potential pitfalls of going into the profession. Because, I often talk to, and I wrote about this in my book, about, you know, as a strength coach, even as a guy, like when I got into the field, I didn't think about having a family. I didn't think about relocation. I didn't think about the security that comes with a family and things like that. What were some of the things as a female strength coach you didn't think about when you got in and then realized along the way, and then maybe how they've changed over the course of you know, being 25 plus years in the field?
So for me, Meg Stone was like the person I wanted to be. Meg Stone was like the mecca, and she still is, you know, like the first strength and conditioning coach. She was at Arizona. Mm-hmm. And that's who I really looked up to, and that's who I wanted to be. And I've had opportunities. I was offered the job at Providence College to work with men's basketball at that time. And I honestly turned it down because I'm like, I don't want to give up football.
Right.
And it was one of those things, like, you know, I feel like I'm giving up, and this is obviously before the time, this was 10 years ago, before everyone kind of separated out, you know. And it is harder being a female, and the best coach I ever worked for was Coach Cutter, Dirk Cutter at Arizona State. At that time, I was going to World's Strongest Woman, and TV interviewed him, and he's like, and they're like, what do you feel about a female working with your guys? It's like, I don't care if she's black, green, blue, white, whatever, as long as she gets my kids better, it doesn't matter.
Great.
And that was the best thing that ever happened. And I, you know, value myself as a good strength coach. I start kids, you know, I can coach kids that are 6 years old all the way up to the professional level, and I've had professional level kids throughout the way and go on to the NFL or the NBA and all that. So it's been pretty cool.
Yeah, no, so, I totally agree with that.
You know, but being a female, it is hard, a lot harder. And then the family thing is really hard. My husband, I'm very lucky. My husband is the athletic trainer. He owns the company that covers the professional bull riders, so the PBR. So he travels wherever he wants to go or wherever the event is. So I'm lucky. I can live anywhere and he'll follow me, basically. So it's just like in lifting, I call him my bag bitch because he carries my bag for me. So he can follow me and go wherever. So I'm very lucky in that sense.
That's
but,
great.
You know, when I was at Arizona State, he's like, are you really going to work from 5:30 in the morning until 8 o'clock at night every night? You know, every day you're going to work 80 hours a week for your life, you know? And I'm like, that's kind of what I'm used to. I'm a workaholic, you know, but I love coaching. So being a female, it's a lot harder when you start wanting to have a family and have kids. And, you know, my family are these kids that I coach every day,
right.
You know? So I chose not to have kids. But I know there's a lot of women in the field, they just get frustrated with it, you know, and have the stress of like, well, you know, I can't have a life. I'm not going to be able to have kids. I'm not going to be able to travel. And that is a hard part of the profession. You know, and as you found, family's important.
Absolutely.
You know, it's a very important piece of it.
Yeah, that's, you know, it's one of those things that I often talk about. With my young coaches, you know, I run a pretty comprehensive internship program. I have two former female interns that have gone on to be head strength coaches working with football. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, it's there's challenges you face regardless of, you know, of race, gender, anything, you know, and identifying those and knowing what the pitfalls are or what the challenges are and then having a plan to address them. That's the key. Not knowing what they are, and then just kind of willy-nilly coming up and throwing your hands up, that's when it ultimately drives you out of the profession, you know, and so you've been able to navigate it for years. Along the way, I would imagine, you know, you've made lots of mistakes. You know, what's one of the biggest mistakes that you've made, you know, in your coaching career, and then kind of how you learned from it?
I think for me is that I didn't take the job at Providence College because I wasn't looking at the big picture. I loved being at Boston College. I loved my coaching staff, working with Al Skinner. Boston College men's basketball, he was the best staff I ever worked for. And I think part of me was very selfish that I didn't want to leave that family of those coaches. And I was afraid to expand myself as a coach and go off to Providence. And, you know, I didn't have that vision. I looked at the weight room. I'm like, wow, this is really crappy. It's in a basement. Now they have a beautiful facility.
Right.
It would take 8 years to get to that point.
Sure.
But I think that's one of the things that I made the mistake of. When I was at Nevada Reno, I was also offered the job at Idaho State to work with all of them way back. But I knew the football coach was going to get fired in a year. I'm like, do I take that chance? And I'm like, you know what? I'm not. Same thing happened UCLA. When I was at Boston College, I was offered an associate head job at UCLA. Like, all right, job pays $45,000.
Yeah.
I looked at the guy. I'm like, $45,000 for an associate head job? I'm like,
right.
Are you kidding
me?
I'm like, I can't live. Where am I supposed to live in Westwood, California? Like, well, we're just UCLA. You just should want to come here.
Right.
You know? So it's like you have to work on those steps. And, you know, it's hard. Chris Doyle is making a crap ton of money now at Iowa. I've known Chris for 20 years. And I'm happy for him that he's, you know, up to that salary and making that. But most coaches aren't making that. Most coaches, if you got your top 12, you've got, you know, I left Arizona State making like 55, and then it's like, all right, you know what? I can go on the private side. I was offered $80,000 to go to the private side.
Right.
So at that 10 years ago, I was kind of chasing money.
Sure.
Like I was chasing what was that next job, and it really wasn't important. Like it was important at the time, but now that I'm 10 years later, you know, 43, I'm like, you know what? It really wasn't about the money. It was really about the kids and the opportunities that I had and the people that I had the opportunities to be around. So I think that's one of my biggest mistakes that I made, you know? And I kind of gave up myself of, you know, hey, I'm going to settle to go to the private side. I kind of gave up myself of being like that person in the college side. And I knew I could if I just waited, you know, another couple years.
Right.
But, you know.
You know, one of the things I always talk about on the show is you know, making the big time where you're at, you know, and that's, I think in this field, this is so much of where we're at now is, and the maturity process of going through 20 plus years in the field, like I could really care less what logo's on my chest now. I really can.
Yep.
You know, it's all about the kids and it's all about the experience and I know who I am. You know, I know what type of strength coach I am. I'm not identifying myself with, you know, the place that I'm at or anything along those lines. And I mean, I often tell people, you know, if I had it to do all over again, knowing, you know, wanting to be the family man that I want to be and the husband and all that, I probably would have gone the high school route, you know, just because I could have planted a flag and said, here you go, you know, but, you know, I think that, you know, I think the lesson and the thing that I pulled out, what you just said, is that you don't know what a situation is going to end up being. You go into a situation, you make it what you want it to be, you know, and so Providence College turns out and there's beautiful facility, or you don't know what those situations are going to be on the front end. You just got to have confidence in yourself to know that you can change the situation for the better. And then when opportunities come your way, if you've made the big time where you're at, then you make it hard to say yes sometimes. But if it is a yes, it's going to be a good situation. So. Yeah. I couldn't agree with you more. You know, what do you think, you know, now, I mean, now that you're running the program and you have it, you know, going the way that you want it to be, maybe not the facility size that you want it to be, but you got it going the way you want it to. What do you think makes your program unique? What's different about walking into Franklin High School than maybe any other high school out there?
You know, there's a great saying, no one cares how much you know until they know how much you care.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what it is for us. I care about, when I first started here 5 years ago, it was all about football. It was all, you know, Coach Sidwell, who's our AD, he's awesome. He was like, all right, come in, you know, work with, you know, the football guys because that's who's in the weight room. And it took me 1 year to get just about every other sports team in this facility.
Right.
It's because it's not just about one sport. It's about building a program. And your football players are your lacrosse players. They're your hockey players. They're your baseball players. So it's not just about one sport. You know, we've turned, our injury rate has dropped 75% since we've been here.
Wow.
Wow. And it's been awesome. Like, and for me, it's my, also my background as an athletic trainer. So I take my athletic training skills and I also put that into programming and, you know, and go on, okay, you know, enhance performance at the same time and 5-10-5 and all that. But we also need to work on mobility, movement, and strength at the same time.
Right.
So I think that's kind of what our, sets our program apart a little bit, is the fact that it's all encompassing. It's, I've, like I said, 190 kids in my off-season winter program, and it's not just football. It's my lacrosse boys, my lacrosse girls, my soccer kids. Boys soccer is my second biggest group that comes to football that comes in this weight room, is boys soccer. And they're phenomenal kids. But I have great support from the coaches. Like, the coaches are like, year-round, all right. And I've been able to create that college environment of, hey, it's a year-round process. You're not just coming in here during the off-season. He's like, we're testing in the spring. We are coming in, and I have a summer program. The kids are all here over the summer. They're in during one or two times during the in-season, during the fall. And then winter rolls around, they're right back at it.
Right.
So it's a great environment, and we have great support. We have a lot of coaches that have been here for a long time, and they understand and value strength and conditioning as a whole. And that truly comes from the top two, from our athletic director. You know, Coach Sidwell is great.
When you talk about the injury, I mean, you're able to reduce injuries by 75%, and obviously have an athletic training background that helps with that.
Yep.
I mean, what are maybe some things, some tangible things that you, that people can walk away from that you've been doing to really kind of reduce that injury rate? Is it that you're putting your correctives, I mean, are you screening and then putting correctives throughout the workout? Are you coming in and they have an individualized program? Is it kind of a global corrective type of situation? How are you implementing your injury prevention strategies?
I go basically phases 1 through 4. I kind of start with House's Block Zero program.
Okay.
As kids come in, I evaluate our kids as they come in. I'd like to be able to have a time to do the functional movement screening and test every kid, but sometimes I don't have that time because it's me. I have myself, and then I have one or two assistants depending on the sports season during the year. But as we go, I coach kids and I'm like, all right, Joey, we need to work on ABCD. You know, Matt, we need to work on ABCD. I look at how they land, how they move, how they jump. And I also set up our program to where, in the winter is a little bit different because we have so many kids, but I either do program A is speed, agility, and injury prevention, and program B is lifting. So it depends on what's coming up within their sports season.
Right.
So I spend a lot of time on mobility, movement, speed, teaching kids how to stop, start, change direction. And that was a great thing about, you know, work with Martin Rooney. He's like speed guru, you know, and getting his mobility and movement stuff, even with House and coming up with our pre-work. And I've taken all that pre-work and I put it into our programs. Even our lifting programs, our traditional quote-unquote lifting programs, they come in, they do pre-work, they do, you know, things, band pull-aparts, and they're going to do overhead squats, and they're going to do, you know, little corrective exercises before they even start their lift. But I've been able to, over the past 5 years, be able to teach the kids progressions of those programs as we've gone. You know, I have kids, you know, some kids, oh, you know, I want to do bands and chains. You can't even squat the bar, let alone using bands and chains. We had guys in college that couldn't even do bands and chains,
right.
But it's the next latest and greatest thing, you know, and all of a sudden you see a kid stapled.
Right.
You know, okay, not the smart thing. So we gradually progress, you know, people's kind of like the bells and the whistles and all that. And sometimes you go to a private facility and it's all these bells and whistles and, you know, high speed treadmills. Well, you got to crawl before you walk.
Right.
You know, you gotta walk before you jog. You gotta jog before you run. If you don't know how to do those things, you're always going to have dysfunction. And if you never fix that dysfunction, you're never going to be the true top ultimate athlete that you should be.
You know, I think for somebody like yourself that's such an accomplished athlete, you know, walking into a high school weight room, you know, for the first time, or dealing with high school athletes for the first time, I mean, you could walk in and put 3 plates on the bar and it's not even a warm-up set, you know, versus somebody that can maybe struggle with the bar. You know, how have you been able to kind of, and this is something that I faced as a dad. You know, I mean, I've dealt with college athletes, pro athletes my whole career. You know, so not being able to squat or be able to do at least the movement of a clean or something along those lines, that's always been something that's pretty natural and you know, they're pretty athletic and I've been able to kind of just clean up dysfunction and things along those lines.
Yeah.
Dealing with my own kids, you know, it's like, what do you mean you can't squat? What do you mean you can't bench press? You know, how have you been able to kind of, you know, dumb yourself down or put in progressions in place to be able to get these athletes to be able to do some basic things that, you know, just so come so naturally to you?
My husband would tell me I'm a power lifter. I'm not an athlete. So we have that argument all the time. But for our kids here, like, we separate, like, as a freshman coming in, you're on a separate program.
Right.
So our freshman program, our summer program, it's grades 10 through 12 football that comes in, and then a couple hours later, it's all the freshman football kids or all the freshman other sports. So we really dummy things down in terms of, all right, you're going to learn how to squat. We do goblet squats. We squat to a box. We do overhead squats. But if they can't, overhead squats are one of the most complicated exercises to do.
Right.
You know, if they have upper back tightness, they have hip flexor tightness, they're never going to be able to do an overhead squat.
Right.
So we work on some little things first, and then we progress them to a bar. So it could be, you know, goblet squats, bodyweight squat, goblet squat, partner squat, front squat, and then back squat. So that's kind of how we progress on through with getting kids to squat. We have kids who can't even do a push-up. Then how can you bench if you can't even do a push-up? Pull-up, same thing.
Right.
You know, we got kids that can't even do pull-ups, and it's like, okay, you can't even do a pull-up. How do you expect a deadlift? How do you expect to do cleans? How do you expect to be able to set your back and hold your back into positions? When I was at Arizona State, we did a lot of iso hold movements. So iso hold, holding for 10 seconds, and then you do reps for 10 reps and
right.
things like that. Iso, we do a lot of iso holds with our kids, and they hate them. But they're one of the best things in the world we can do with our kids.
How have you managed their psyche? I mean, they're walking in, they're seeing the seniors putting on all kinds of weight, you know, and they want to get there as fast as they possibly can. How have you been able to manage them and their expectations?
You know, that's one of the things we talk about. I talk a lot with our underclassmen, and I think how we separate from our summer program and they come in as freshmen, I tell them flat out, I don't expect you to be as strong as, you know, a senior. I don't expect you to be as fast as a senior. You're going to go through little progressions. You're going to go through little things. And if you're not good at the little things, you're never going to be great at the big things. So I think they understand that. And I really think they and their parents appreciate the fact that I do separate out the freshmen from coming in. And then once, you know, football season rolls around, you know, freshmen, they come in twice a week and they train and they gradually see some success and some confidence. And then by the time the winter rolls around postseason, they're like, all right, I have some more confidence in the weight room and I can do some things. You know, same with the girls. When I first started, I used to go, all right, guys, you're going Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Girls, you're going Tuesday, Thursday, optional Friday if you want to. And I separated them out to give the girls confidence in the weight room. Now the girls like, I don't give a shit. Get out of my rack.
Yeah, right.
You know, and they feel comfortable in the weight room. And if guys are screwing around, they're going to be like, give me that. I want that, you know.
Right.
So it's that environment and giving them the confidence that they're going to get better, and it's baby steps along the way.
Sure. You talked about your summer program and how you've been able to grow that to 500 plus athletes in the summer. What are some strategies that you've used to kind of get that going? I mean, I would imagine a lot of high school strength coaches listening are like, man, I want 500 people in my summer program. How are you able to do that?
Again, I use the adage, no one cares how much you know until you know how much you care. Every single kid that is in my program is important. Is every single kid. I don't care if you're the worst athlete on the football field or the best athlete on the football field. You are the most important kid when you walk into this weight room to me. So in our summer program, I separate out our kids. So I separate in from 6:30 to 8 is our football program, 10 to 12. Then from 8 in the morning till 9:30, it's all my Olympic boy sports. So it's soccer, it's hockey, it's basketball, those type of sports. From 9:30 to 11, it's my girls program. So I put all my girls program together, and then from 11 to 12:30, I go with freshmen. And then freshmen, then I also have 7th and 8th grade program as well, and then I have a 5th and 6th grade program.
Thanks.
So it's And here, the other part of it, too, is we charge $125 or $135 for our summer program. So it's a heck of a lot cheaper than any other program you can go into, you know, your $1,000 8-week programs and get taught by an intern. You don't even get taught by a professional kind
right.
of thing. So all my coaches are all strength conditioning coaches. I hire 5 or 6 strength and conditioning coaches over the summer. Some of them are teachers, some of them are PE teachers here. Some work at other schools. Some have great relationships already with the kids, and it feeds off itself. Kids talk about it. They talk about what they do. We create games. We create different, challenges every week. You know, the whole sport specific thing is that word drives me nuts because
sure.
it's like, well, my kid needs to be sport specific for baseball. Yeah, well, go play baseball, and that's sports specific. The weight room, you're not going to be sports specific.
Right.
But in the summer on Wednesdays, we do a speed and agility on Wednesdays, and we look at, okay, if you play field hockey, bring your field hockey stick. Mm-hmm. We're going to do some speed and agility. Now we're going to incorporate some field hockey skills into your speed and agility so you know how to utilize those newfound skills in playing field hockey.
Right.
Soccer, same thing. We bring soccer balls out, say, okay, I'm not going to, you know, you guys are going to run through ladders, work on mechanics, and then we're going to put a little fun games to it kind of thing. We do that with football, too, as long as our football coaches don't have an actual ball in their hand during the summer and breaking rules and all that stuff. But most of my coaches are non. I put them with separate groups, so they're not breaking the MIA rules. So.
Right.
Well, you talked about, all right, so you charge $125. Now, is that, I mean, you have to pay for some of your staffing out of that, but where's the rest of that money go? Is that something that's subsidizing your salary? Is it going back into the weight room?
I'm trying to figure that out actually right now, where it's actually going. It does go into the athletic department. They pay me seasonally, so I'm paid as a head coach's stipend, which is $5,300 a sports season.
Yeah.
So for three seasons, and then I get paid, well, because I'm a teacher, I only get paid $27 an hour in the summer. So because I'm a teacher. Right. So it kind of stinks. You know, we brought in over $100,000 over the summer last year.
Right.
We paid out in coaches, we paid out about 50 grand, 60 grand, half of it. I'm like, all right, where's the rest of that 40 grand going?
Yeah.
So that kind of stinks with how it's set up, but that's just the way the school is. But if I want something and I say, hey, Coach Sidwell, I need bands to the weight room, I need some new bars, I need this, he's like, all right, you put the money in the budget, let's go.
Right. Well, I think that leads into my next question. I think, you know, like I mentioned early on, you know, something that I've preached about in the field right now, I think there's two things that we really should be focused on. One is we should be focused on creating a degree-seeking program for strength and conditioning specifically. And what that does for me, in my mind, is it gives you places for your aging strength coaches to go. I mean, once you're done doing it, you know, you can only physically do this for so long. You know, it gives you a place to go to be able to teach to finish out your career and retire being a strength coach. The second thing I think is creating jobs at the high school level. I mean, we talk about, we've done a great job of promoting the profession, getting people in, but it's a saturated market, you know, but the liability at a high school weight room is no different than the liability at a college weight room. You could argue that it's probably even more liable, you know? And so, you know, placing a strength coach at every high school, in my opinion, is where our focus should be. You know, what needs to happen, in your opinion, for that to happen? Because, I mean, I'm looking at it going, okay, well, shoot, you're bringing in $100,000 in the summer. You know, that's a pretty solid salary for somebody, an annual salary for somebody, you know, at a high school level. Why is it being so? I mean, the money situation is one that I think everybody will point to, is there's not enough money. But you're proven in your situation that there is. So what do you think needs to happen for that to occur?
I think, well, here in Massachusetts, most of the high schools don't have traditional strength coaches. Most high schools have their football coach being the strength coach.
Right.
So I think that needs to change. I think once athletic directors, and most athletic directors, like Coach Sidwell, you know, he played at Brown, you know, his dad was an NFL coach, NFL, you know, because he's, there's a lot of legacy there, so he understands the importance of strength conditioning. Sometimes you have these ADs that have no idea what really the importance of strength conditioning is, and they don't understand, like, hey, it's going to reduce my injury level and my injury rates, my kids are going to play longer. And then even these insurance companies, I had an argument up at our central office. I'm like, you guys have no insurance rates are ridiculous. You can reduce your insurance rates just by getting kids healthier and getting kids in a weight room, you know, so you don't have all these injuries and you don't have, you know, all these surgeries done. So I think it's more education is going to happen. I think the NSCA has done a pretty good job of, you know, trying to promote the strength and conditioning aspect in high schools. And I think it'll blossom eventually. Down south, you know, there's strength coaches in Texas. I think every single high school in Texas has a strength coach. You know, Midwest is growing. Down in Georgia, they're all growing. East Coast is a little different. There's only two or three of us that are in public high schools. In private high schools, you'll find them at Xaverian. You're going to find them at, you know, Central Catholic or Malden Catholic. You're going to find them at private schools. And I think private schools, because most of those ADs have that college mentality, I think until most high schools get that college mentality, it's going to be a little bit of a struggle. But there is money to be, you know, be made in made, but also be able to hire someone in that position. And it'd be a great position, either it's for someone who's retiring or someone who's even just starting out.
Right.
You know, I have interns. I have an intern now from Bridgewater State. He's like, this is really what I want to do. He's like, this environment has made me love being in the high school. I want to now go into a college. I want to intern at a college facility, and this is what I want to do. Because he understands and he sees all the kids that you're helping and coaching every single day, and you look on the football field or the soccer field or the basketball court, and you say, hey, I helped that kid get a little bit better today.
Absolutely.
And that's about it.
Well, I would think that, especially at that level, it's so rewarding to see that freshman that could barely walk and chew gum, you know, and then turn into an adult, you know, before your eyes. You know, I think that's pretty rewarding. And again, I would argue that maybe it's more important from a strength and conditioning standpoint at the high school level than it is college, you know, pro even. But, well, hey, Leanne, we always end the show with some resources here. What do you think is the best piece of coaching advice you ever received?
Take every opportunity you have, good, bad, or indifferent, and embrace it, because you will always learn something in every single situation. I've learned how to treat people, how to not treat people, how to deal with coaches, how to deal with difficult coaches, how to deal with great coaches, how to deal with difficult parents, you know, my kids going to the next level kind of thing, and having to have that sit-down conversation with them. Probably not, but okay, if you think so. But I think you have to take every single opportunity and embrace every single opportunity, whether you're an intern at a school and they, you know, just have you clean equipment, you know what? That's one piece of it, and you grow from there.
Right. What's a book, app, and website recommendation?
I actually just read your book, and now I'm going to read Triphasic Training. I'm kind of app wise. I'm not so much into the apps because I'm, you know, I'm 43, so it's asking the kids how do I do this on the computer? So that's one thing I need to get better with, is the whole computerized side of things. You know, but there's been, you know, I read up on, you know, Martin Rooney stuff all the time, you know, houses, whatever he posts, you know, Mark Uyama is a great resource as well. So I read a lot of online things.
No, that's great. Well, obviously, like I said, I mean, I've watched it from afar. I've been a fan from afar, and obviously seeing the way that you're doing things and hearing you speak, you're doing it the right way. And truly appreciate the contribution and coming on the show and sharing with everybody. And I took two pages of notes here. So really, really cool. So I appreciate you coming on. Thanks so much.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's been great.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefrey.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefrey can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefrey. On Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefrey. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.